Habits are something that I've been teaching my clients for quite a while now. And what I found is that the better I teach these, the more success somebody can have quite quickly. So what I've been doing is I've been teaching a lot of clients this. I had already set up a lot of programs, and you're going to get this a little bit later in other videos that you go through, I'm sure. But what I wanted to do was include this in the Fundamentals program. I think that this is a really important series of videos that will help you create the habits that will gain success. And the reason I'm putting it here is it's following in alignment with what we've already talked about. We've talked about your why. We've talked about goals. We're talking about decisions, and we're talking about how to put all these things together. Habits, your routine, is that last piece. Once you understand why you are doing what you're doing, and you start to understand what you want to do, you're reaching those specific measurable goals, you've looked at kind of a little bit of your plan. Well, your habits are how you accomplish the plan. Your base habits create the foundation from which you can start taking action. And I hope this makes sense. If it doesn't, go and review some of the other videos. Let's jump into this here. Habits, what are they? How do you create the perfect habit? This is going to be the quick understanding of how habits are created. Really, if you're going to get into habit creation, what you need to do is talk to somebody. So again, in the webinars and you've got to realize that people in our lives that can help us with this kind of stuff are the most valuable in our lives. They've been invaluable in my life. This is why I believe in coaching myself. When I give coaching to other people, I believe in it because of how much help it's been for me, as well as for my clients. So what I'd suggest is really reach out to somebody. Make sure that you're getting help with this kind of stuff. If it costs you a little bit of time, energy, money, that's fine. Do what you need to do to make sure that you're getting the right habits. And one warning before we get into this, I've had conversations with wiser individuals than me. One thing that comes across is that wise individuals have a long-term focus. So this is what I'm going to encourage you to do. What I'm going to encourage you to do is while you watch these videos, as you work through some of the material, instead of thinking, oh, I would like to change these 34 habits in my life, that's not going to help you. You know that's not going to help you because you're actually not going to change any of them. And even though it looks like you're going to get a lot done in the first, couple of hours, you're going to peter out and it's going to be really frustrating for you afterwards. So avoid the frustration and instead take on a different type of learning and growth. And that is, ask yourself, what is one habit I can change? And instead of changing it over the next week, take your time with this. And as we get to the next slide, you're going to see that habits take a little while to grow. Every habit takes a different amount of time. So what I want you to do, and energy and effort. So what I want you to do is really give yourself to this. Pick one habit and then commit to really working on this for like 6 months. If you committed to do this for 6 months and it actually changed and you didn't have to go back and tweak it over and over and over, and you didn't have to feel like a failure all the time afterwards because you never really learned it in the first place, that's going to be foundational for you. It's going to be fantastic for you. So work on one habit. That's my encouragement as I go into this. Okay, how long does it take to create a habit? I'm sure you've heard different things. The most common answer I hear to this question is 21 days. It takes 21 days to create a habit. That is absolutely false. The average it takes, and this is research that's been done quite a bit, it was quite extensive research, showed that the average is about 66 days. But the shortest time it takes to create a habit is around 18 days, so that might be where the 3 weeks kind of thing comes in. But it can take up to 254 days to create a habit in the research that was done. And it can take longer than this. I've had habits in my life that were really difficult to change. What I'm trying to do with this is present something in a different way to you. If it takes longer than 3 weeks to create a habit, that's probably rings true for you. For how many times have you tried a habit for 2 or 3 weeks and it hasn't stuck? So I want to encourage you that you haven't, it's not because you are faulty. There's not something wrong with you. It's because a lot of the information we get about habits is simply wrong, okay? But know also that it can take a while. It depends on a lot of things. The whether or not your habit is working, whether or not you reach your habit, is based on a lot of different ideas, which I will get to in a little bit here, okay? For example, length of time. How long have you been involved in the last habit? If you've been, let's say you want to start a morning routine and you are used to waking up at 7:30. That's considered early for you. Well, if 7:30 is early for you, and if weekends, you've always slept in on weekends and holidays for your entire life, and you're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, if you've been doing this for decades, well, guess what? If you've been doing that for a long time, it's going to be more difficult to change for you. The reason why is your brain is connected with that former way of thinking. And it's been connected for a very long time. Secondly, how emotionally reliant are you on the habits that you already have? So for example, the perfect example of this is smoking. If you've been smoking for, again, 20 or 30 years, that now you've smoked for quite a while, and let's say you started off smoking cigarettes while you were meeting with a friend, and now it turned into smoking with other people, and it turned into smoking, you've got certain routines before you go to bed, first thing when you wake up, lunch breaks, breaks at work. It starts to become this huge thing where emotionally you've connected with this habit on so many levels that you don't simply need to quit smoking. You actually need to train yourself in many different ways throughout the day. When you're feeling stressed, you smoke. When you're feeling good, you smoke. To celebrate, you smoke. All of a sudden, you've got all this emotional reliance on this one habit. It seemingly meets a lot of needs. And I know it doesn't, but it feels like it. And because of that, smoking is a very difficult habit to change. You have to invest a lot of time and energy into that, because there's so much connected to it. So if you've got a habit around, I don't know, the holidays, or you've got a habit around something that is very emotional for you, and it's been helping you with that, then guess what? It's going to take a long time to change that. What an example might be stress eating. When you feel stressed and you eat, that's another great example of how you're not going to get things done. If you procrastinate, this is another great example of emotional reliance. We learn to procrastinate early on in life, and it kills our business, but no matter what we want to do, it doesn't change because we rely on this break. We believe that emotional, and I'm not going to get into procrastination too much right now, but somehow we believe that procrastinating, we can avoid something for a little bit of time. It doesn't work, but we still do it. High emotional reliance. So it's going to take longer to change procrastination usually. What other skill sets does a person have? So let's say you want to change a habit. Well, if you've been building a bunch of skills into your life that allow you to change habits, then that's kind of like learning a lot of languages. If you want to learn another language, and that's the first second language you've learned, it sounds a little bit funny there. If it's the first time you've learned a second language, it will take you a little bit longer. Why? Because you're not used to learning languages. And in the same way, if you've studied 18 languages, if you're a polyglot, then it's going to be very easy to, or much easier to learn that next language. Why? Because you've got this skill set. You can apply the concepts. You've already got categories for those. And in the same way with habits, it's going to take longer to do this initially if you don't have a bunch of skill sets surrounding how to build a habit in your life. So if you haven't done this a lot, it's going to take a little bit. What about support systems? If we're trying to create a new habit, or trying to hijack an old habit and create a new habit out of it, if we're trying to set up our life around habits in a different way, and we're in a time of a lot of stress when we're going through a ton, that's going to be difficult to set that habit right now. Why? Because it's going to be associated with stress. And because we typically avoid stress in our lives. We want to avoid stress. We've got that fight or flight response. So if we have support systems around us, if we've got our family life is going really well and our work is going really well and we're kind of relaxed, we are going to do far better with habits. Also, this helps with accountability. I'm going to get into accountability a little bit later, but with accountability, if you've got people around you that can support you, that's going to help. I actually was talking to my wife last night and said, T, I'm trying to start a new habit. I want you to ask me every night for the next week how much time I spent doing this one thing. Well, because I've got a wife that supports me in so many ways, that this is really helpful. If you don't have a partner that supports you, if you don't have somebody, friends, family members, other people around you that really engage with you and encourage you with the things you're trying to do and understand that, that's going to be more difficult for you now. I hope this makes sense. So the length of time, emotional reliance, other skill sets, support systems around you, based on those things, it may take you a lot shorter, a lot less time to create this new habit and to create it in a way that's sustainable, or it may take a lot longer, and that's okay. Simply know that, and every time you do create a new habit, it takes less time. Okay, what is a habit? Your brain is a little bit like water. Water always travels where? It always travels down. It always takes the path of least resistance. And your brain is like this. Your brain is made to work in a very efficient way. It's wired that way, okay? And habits are efficient shortcuts. Our brains take up a lot of energy, and I'm going to get to this in a little bit here, but really quickly, the more that we can offload to habits, the more, and a habit is kind of like an unconscious thing that we do, right? For example, and I'm going to get to this in a second as well, sorry, I'm jumping ahead of myself here a little bit. We do so many things without thinking. You type in phone numbers or codes into a computer or whatever without consciously thinking about it most of the time. You drive without consciously thinking about it. You dress without consciously thinking about it. You do all of these things without consciously thinking about them. Tying your shoes and walking, running, things that used to be difficult for us are now easy because they've become habits, because we've done them so many times that we have a way of doing it without having to think consciously about it. So habits allow us to take shortcuts. We don't have to think about it. We can just do it. And our brain now doesn't have to use as much energy. It's an efficient way of doing it. Now, if you've walked down a certain path 100 times, for example, near my house, there's a park. And in the winter, when the snow starts getting deeper and deeper, there's one path across this entire park. And everyone takes the same path. Why does everyone take the same path? Well, because it's already there. It's easy. To create a new path and a new, I don't know if you have to climb through a snowbank, that would be difficult. So everyone takes the easy thing, and that's how our brains work. We always take the easier option. And that's a good thing. I mean, if we weren't efficient in our brains, we'd waste a lot of energy. Can you imagine if you had to consciously think about every single decision you made every day? Which shoe am I going to put on, my right shoe or my left shoe? How am I going to tie my shoelaces today? Am I going to do the bunny ear method, or am I going to do the other method, or whatever? If we had to consciously think about every, that would slow us down so much, and we would get very little done in our lives. So habits are efficient shortcuts there. And the great example here is remembering a code for your computer. Have you ever tried to type in a code for your computer, and maybe you've changed the code? So maybe you change it every 3 months or so. I had one computer when I was working when I was a psychologist working for the local government with mental health and addictions. At our work we had computers that required a code change, and I think it was every 90 days. And so every 90 days I would change my code and I would remember it. But then the next morning when I went into work and just typed in my code quickly, it would say it was the wrong code. And I would remember, oh yeah, I set my new code last time. But I would automatically do this efficient shortcut of my old code because I wasn't consciously thinking about it. As soon as I brought it to my conscious attention, I would remember it, I would set in the new code, and it would take a few times before it became a habit again. And that's okay, that is a normal experience. Did you know that about 40% of your daily decisions are governed by habits? 40%, think about that for a second. A ton of what we do every single day is not consciously done. I'm giving some examples here. I referred to them earlier, but what shoe do you put on first? When you put on your pants, your socks, you put on your right side or left side? What about in your mornings? What do you do first thing in the morning? How do you make your coffee? How do you make your shake? How do you get ready for work? Do you have a consistent shower routine? I do the same thing in the shower every single morning. Every single morning. I will get into the shower. I start the water in a certain way. I jump into the shower. I turn on the shower head. And then I wash my hair and I wash my face. Then I rinse it out, and then I condition my hair, and then I wash my body, and then I rinse it off, or I wash my face again. I rinse all of that off, and then I take off out of the shower. Okay, so I have the same routine every single day, every single day. And that's actually really helpful because now I don't have to think about it consciously. What about getting home from work? Do you take the same route? Do you ever take a different route? Most people don't. Most people go to the store the same way. Most people do the same thing. And actually driving is a big thing for this. If I'm distracted and I'm on a road that I usually take to my office or that I usually take to, I don't know, one of my corporate clients or whatever, then I will, and if I'm distracted, I will take the same route to my client, even though maybe I'm trying to go somewhere else. And I'll be like, oh no, I took the wrong turn. Or I didn't take the turn. Does that ever happen to you? Again, we are efficient, and this helps immensely with efficiency. Here's the example that I wanted to give you. Our brain is a little bit like the Hummer of our body, okay? It's pretty flashy in some ways, but the big thing here is that it is a gas guzzler. It consumes an enormous amount of fuel compared to its size and weight. So if you take any other organ, if you take any other part of your body that weighs the same as the brain, it uses a very small amount of energy, a very small amount of fuel compared to the brain. So our brain, I often say, is kind of like the Hummer of our body because it utilizes so much energy. And this is why it's so helpful to be efficient. If we were not efficient, if we didn't have all these subconscious things going on, if we didn't take the same way to work and we didn't put the socks on, whatever it was, if we questioned everything, then again, we would need far more energy. Now, if you are learning a new task, this often happens. If you're learning a new task in the morning, have you ever been tired in the afternoon? You ever gone to classes again or taken a course for work or something like that and you are just dead tired by the afternoon because you're learning new things. You're activating your brain in a different way. I'm convinced that one of the main differences between really successful people in business and unsuccessful business is that successful people have offloaded more than 40% to their subconscious mind. I'm going to repeat that. Successful people, in my opinion, have offloaded more than 40% to their subconscious mind. They've created more habits in their lives so they don't have to think consciously about things so that they get more done with less effort. What that means is that at the end of the day, they have more energy. They've got more brain power to continue investing in people or business or whatever they're doing. That means they make more money in less time, less energy. Does this make sense? I hope this makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, please find a way to contact me and we'll talk about this a little bit, okay? This is such an important point. My belief is that, and this doesn't take a lot, my guess is that really successful people have simply offloaded about 60% of their decision-making to their habits rather than 40%. With just that small increase, another 20% increase, that's a 50% increase on 40, but with that small increase, you could change your entire life. How do you create habits for your business routines that will change everything? Really, that's what it is about. Why are they important again? If we don't have habits, we drain our energy and our willpower. We have to make too many decisions, and that's what I've been talking about thus far, okay? Secondly, if we have the wrong habits, we do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So again, maybe you when you get into an argument with somebody that you care about, you follow the same path and make the same terrible decisions regarding how to communicate. Maybe you yell, or maybe you disengage, maybe you ignore somebody, maybe you, whatever you do, you say the wrong things. Well, if we've got the wrong habits, again, we will continually do them because it's like that one path down the middle of the snow-banked park. There's so much snow and we'll just go down the same route every single time. If we don't create new habits, new pathways, then we're going to stay on the same pathway we always have been. It's just too easy and our brains are efficient. If we have the right habits, we can now focus on what is most important in our day. When we have more focus, we are far more productive. And I don't mean productive in the sense of like being a factory. I'm talking about productivity in every realm of our lives. So we will be more productive with sleep. We will sleep better. We will be more productive with food and eating. I don't necessarily mean more efficient in the sense that you will eat faster all the time, because that's not good for us either. But you'll be thoughtful initially. You'll create a habit that creates that thoughtfulness, that maybe you take more time to eat, you digest better, and you've got less stress or ulcers or whatever. You meditate a little bit or practice some mindfulness and breathing techniques around eating. You can create the right habits in any area, with relationships, with business. All this stuff is so important because you will have far more focus. When you are far more focused, you get more done in a shorter period of time, most of the time, or at least you set things up in a way where you are more productive overall. So for example, if you take longer to eat lunch, maybe you're used to eating in 10 minutes, dine and dash, run off. Maybe you take now 45 minutes to eat. You take your time. You spend time with somebody else at the same time. You enjoy the meal. You relax a little bit. And it gives you more energy for the afternoon. That could be another way you can use this, okay? You're more productive now because you're more focused. Okay, how is a habit formed? This is a really big question to me, and it's something that I've studied a crazy amount because it's so important for people. Once you understand how habits form, you can start creating your own habits. So I'm going to talk about the habit loop here in this video. The habit loop has three parts, and this is something that just goes around and around and around again and creates really strong habits. The first is a cue. You need to have some cue. And so if you think about Pavlov's dogs, I'm sure you remember the story from school at some point in time where there was a man named Pavlov. He was a scientist, and he was doing experiments on dogs, and he noticed that when he rang a bell, the dogs would start salivating because whenever he rang the bell, food was coming out. And so he started testing these dogs, and he realized that pretty soon he could ring the bell even though there was no food and no food was coming, the dogs would still salivate. He could ring the bell just after a meal and the dogs would salivate. He would ring the bell at other times and the dogs would salivate. It was now a cue that the dog's brains had attached this sound to, I got to get ready for food. That's as simple as it is, and that's as simple as our brains are. A cue is simply that initial catalyst that starts us into a pattern, okay? So again, a cue is simply telling our brain that it's time to do something. Now, later on, this becomes a craving. Those dogs, when the bell rang, would start to crave food. That's why they were salivating. They were expecting it and craving it a little bit. And this is the same in all addictions. And by the way, we all have addictive brains. That's part of what helps us remember things. It's part of what helps us create these habits. And we've all have addictive brains on some level. I meet people and they say, oh, I got kind of an addictive personality. I say, well, we all do. We all do. We've got to use this now for our benefit rather than our harm. So again, later on, the cue becomes the craving. I'm repeating this a couple of times because it's so important. What you want to do is create a craving for the habit that you want to create. I was talking to somebody within the last week here or so, and they said that their partner works out every day, and they didn't used to enjoy working out. But now they've done it so long, it's become such a habit in their lives, that now they actually crave it. Something that they did not enjoy before has become a craving. I find that fascinating. I love that, because the brain's working exactly how it should. And if we're doing what we want to do, if we're creating the cues that lead to the patterns the actions we want to take, then it's exactly the way it works. It's supposed to work. So the second part of the loop is the action or the response. So you have a cue. The cue is my alarm goes off. The response is I jump out of bed, go to the living room, and start my morning routine. Okay, that could be action response. The cue could be, it could be as soon as 8 o'clock hits or as soon as supper is done. So finishing supper could be the cue. As soon as supper is done, then I turn off my phone for the rest of the evening and spend it with my family. That's the action or the response. You can create a habit out of anything. Out of anything. It's amazing what you can do. So there's a cue, there's a response, and then there's a reward. And the reward is simply a dopamine release. Now, I'm going to talk about dopamine for just a few seconds here. It's not super important that I talk about it long, but dopamine is a neurotransmitter in our brains. It's a chemical that's released in our brains, and it does a lot of things. But one thing it does is it helps us learn. When we experience euphoria, when we experience joy, when we experience pleasure on some level, dopamine is released in our brains. And what that does is it helps create a craving. It helps create a craving for that. So we have something enjoyable. What our brain does is it goes, wait a second, what happened? How did I get this? And as we learn how we got it, then we continually do it over and over and over again. Okay, so again, a really quick example. Let's talk about maybe an odd example like fear. Let's say when you were growing up, you had an older sibling or a parent, and that parent or older sibling was scary or did something mean to you. Maybe they bullied you a little bit or used, I don't know, physical aggression against you or something like that. And so you learned to react in a certain way. And your reaction, I'll use two examples. So let's say kid A, they're in the same family. Same family. Let's say the parents are physically abusing these kids, okay? And they, maybe when they're drunk or something. And kid A learns, in order to avoid the parents and to be safe, they simply hide. So when they know someone, the cue is mom or dad is angry. The action response is hide. The reward is I'm safe. I don't get picked on. I don't get bullied here today, okay? Kid B learns something completely different. Let's say kid B, the cue is mom and dad are reactionary or they're angry or they're stressed, and their action or response is that they actually become very aggressive at home. They're even more aggressive than their parents. And maybe the reward is that when their parents get to that place, they just leave that kid alone. Well, kid A learns in life that whenever there's stress in the future, this is as simple as our brains make the connection, is whenever there's stress in the future, I need to hide. I'm afraid of conflict. I need to be careful with conflict. Everything's scary. Person B grows up, and they're siblings. Maybe they're twins. Twin B grows up, and their belief, the connection their brain has made, is I need to be the aggressor. So whenever I feel threatened, if I am aggressive, that will help me. That will keep me safe. Again, this is as simple as our brains make it out to be. So the dopamine is released. I'm safe. There's a kind of a relaxation. And then in the future, I respond to the same cues in the same ways. So again, think about it being defensive in relationships. How defensive are you? How do you react when you're defensive? Procrastination. How do you procrastinate? What is the cue? What's the reward? Well, I don't have to, I feel less stressed for a short period of time, even though the stress comes back later on, correct? Okay, let's give some examples here. One example is my sugar addiction. I've told lots of people about this before. It's something that I've struggled with for a long time in my life. Here's how it works. When I was young, growing up in my family, supper, often the whole family was at the supper table. That was something that was important to my parents. However, suppers were often filled with anxiety. There's a lot of stress around supper. And this makes sense. I mean, it's the end of the day. People are tired, so people are going to be a little bit more reactionary. Often my dad was reacting to certain things, and we felt bad around the supper table. So that's, and there were lots of laughs too. But there was a lot of emotion around supper. Now, also, almost always, my mom made dessert, and we always ate dessert after supper, almost always. So my brain, this is what I believe happened. My brain somehow made the connection between, oh, if I am stressed, if I eat sugar, then I feel okay. And if you think about it, it's kind of how it worked at the supper table, right? In a simple way. I would feel stressed during supper. I would eat dessert, something sugary, something sweet, and soon after I could relax a little bit because I was able to leave the table and go off and do my own thing for the evening. So somehow my mind made this connection. Well, guess what I do now when I'm stressed? I look for sugar. We actually don't even keep sugar in the house for the most part. We basically don't have snacks. And then one of those reasons is that my wife and I have realized that we use sugar to mask other things. So we just stay away from sugar. But if I am stressed, if I'm feeling a little anxious, if other things are going on, you know what I will inevitably do? I will inevitably find my hand on the deep freezer door or the freezer door. I'll be looking for sugar. Even if there's nothing there, I'll be looking for it. And my wife always knows when I'm stressed. She'll be like, Mark, what's going on? I can see that you're stressed. I can see you're thinking about something. Why? Because I've got this cue, stress, pattern, sugar, go find sugar and eat it, and the reward of, oh, I can relax. And actually, sugar is a stimulant that takes your mind off of something, so it actually does work this way, okay? Another example of a habit, the habit loop, the way this works, is checking email or social media or text every 3.5 minutes. Maybe you're the kind of person that thinks, well, I need to serve my customers. This is a belief you have. And maybe you've been told before, hey, listen, this is so good. When you answer my emails quickly, when you answer my texts quickly, when you answer whatever quickly, that's great. You are a fantastic business person. Maybe you're told this. Well, now you've created this habit where you have this urge, this strong urge to check email or text every couple of minutes, every minute, whatever it is. I've known people like this. One of the problems with this is that you actually don't get anything else done in the day. At least not a lot, at least not in a focused way, because you can't focus on something for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and do a lot of work with that. People find their ideal times to focus to be 45 to 90 minutes in time. So I know you're not getting as a lot done if you're checking every 5 or 10 minutes, or you're checking it every time it goes ding for your computer or your phone or whatever. Every time a text comes in, so that's the cue. Every time a text comes in, it sends you a vibrates or sends you a message or sends you a ding or something, and you check your email. And the reward is, okay, I've done everything I need to. I've taken care of everyone else. Now I can focus on my own stuff again. Another example is TV at the end of a long day. Some people come home and say they've been a long day at work. They've put in a lot of energy. They're tired. The cue is as soon as they step in the door and maybe take their shoes off or hang their jacket up or whatever it is, the cue is maybe after supper and they've eaten dessert or something like that, and they go into the living room and they turn on the TV. That's the pattern. The reward is they believe they're relaxing. It's the belief that I deserve this and I can relax now. TV actually doesn't relax. It's like sugar. It's a stimulant. Every habit is simply a pattern waiting for a cue. I'm going to repeat that. Every habit is simply a pattern in life waiting for a cue. And as soon as it's attached to the right cue, it becomes habit quite quickly. Now, here's the good news. I've told you earlier on that it takes between, I don't know, like 18 and 254 days to create a habit. The average is about 66 days. No one that's listening to this is going to create a habit in exactly 66 days, okay? Whenever we hear the average, it's not actually going to happen that way for us. Having said that, what I want to do over the next few slides and over the next little while is I want to give you a pattern where you can create fantastic habits for yourselves, and you can do it far faster than it takes the average person that's kind of aimlessly every January 1st trying to work out at the gym again. That's not going to be you. You're going to be able to do it far faster and far better. Before we really get into how to change your habits, so we've talked about kind of that habit loop, and I want to move on from that and give you some practical application here. But before we do that, I want to talk about bad habits. What can you do about bad habits? Once we understand what bad habits are, then we can start changing them in some ways. And to me, there's no good and bad, if you know me at all. Having said that, there are things that are helpful or not helpful moving us towards our goals. So if to me, a bad habit is a habit that does not move us towards our goals, moves us away from our goals. A good habit is one that supports our goals, okay? So typically, bad habits are an escape. So examples of escape. Sugar. I talked about sugar for myself. Sugar is this escape. It's this emotional thing where I can feel better for the moment rather than facing the anxiety that I'm experiencing or the frustration or whatever it is. And most bad habits are this. If you think about the smoking, drinking type habits, again, often they're an escape from frustration, escape from a strong emotion. There can be other habits. For example, procrastination is this big thing that most people struggle with at some time or other in their lives. And procrastination, that's exactly what procrastination is. It's escape. It's, hey, I there's something going on here right now, and I don't know what to do with it, so I'm going to avoid and do something else. That's basically what procrastination is. This is an important point, that bad habits are typically formed in a different situation a long time ago in a galaxy far away kind of thing. I talked about sugar and how now when I'm frustrated or whatever, I go to sugar, even though it doesn't really make sense anymore in some ways. That was a pattern that was set up far earlier. An even better example of this is maybe the pattern is that you get defensive when you're getting into a situation that could be a conflict type situation, and you react really strongly and you pull away or you ignore things or you fight or you yell or you scream or you say things you shouldn't say, whatever it is. If that's your pattern, you probably learned that or formed that a long time ago. It's probably like childhood or an early relationship or whatever it is. And this is a really important thing to understand. You don't need to understand everything about your past history. And I really believe this. You don't have to understand everything about your past history in order to change your life, in order to move forward with your life, in order to create habits that are going to support your goals. Having said that, a little bit of self-awareness is important. And so I want to encourage you. Initially, this stuff may be difficult to figure out. That's okay. Again, I'm going to give you a system for starting to understand this and starting to figure this out for yourselves. But know that this is a process that you're going to have to learn over time. And if it's something that you just hear from me and it's a three-step process and you take that out and you figure out one habit, that's not going to help you for a long time. It's going to help you initially for a short period of time. And know that my perspective is, again, I want to teach somebody how to fish. I don't want to simply give them fish. So when you go through this, you're going to have to work at it. This is not going to be super easy, super simple at the beginning for most people watching this right now. That's okay. I'm not going to give it away. I'm not going to give you the answer, because that's not going to help you as much as figuring it out for yourself. I sincerely believe this. And I want more for you than simply a three-step system that works in a few situations, but not for the rest of your life. Okay, so changing habits. How are we going to change habits? Basically, we're hijacking the old pattern with a new pattern. So we're using the same cues or the same types of cues. We're using the same types of rewards. And yet we can change the old pattern for a new one, and all of a sudden we have a new habit that's working really well for us. I hope this makes sense, but I'll explain a little bit more here. So number one, we identify the pattern, the thing that we don't want to do. I'm going to use procrastination here because it's so pervasive in our culture. So many entrepreneurs struggle with procrastination. So you identify the pattern. The pattern is I need to get things done, but I don't get them done. I procrastinate. I spend time on the internet, or I play a game on my phone, or I go for a walk, or I get distracted, or I do something else, whatever that is. Okay, I do things that are less important rather than more important, whatever that is. That's identifying the pattern. Now what you need to do is experiment with rewards. So you've got to understand what is this procrastination giving you? What is it giving you? Is it giving you relief? Is it giving you a rush? What is it giving you? And this is where it becomes a lot more difficult. Identifying the pattern's easy. Experimenting with rewards is a little bit more difficult. And I'm going to tell you a really quick story about when I was working in addictions and mental health to kind of give you an example of this. Often I would have clients come in, and they would say, I need to quit, I don't know, using cocaine, or I need to quit using crack, or I need to quit using, I don't know, fentanyl, or whatever it was. I need to quit drinking. And so many people thought that that's the key. They need to just quit. The problem with quitting a pattern, if you've got a habit that you want to change, the problem with simply quitting it is you don't realize that it was giving you something before. And as soon as it's not giving that to you anymore, so again, procrastination, if it gives you relief from stress, if it gives you a rush rather than monotony, whatever it is, if it's giving you a way to escape the stress, and you simply quit procrastination, you now have a problem because you still have the stress. You simply don't have a way to manage it now. And that's a problem. And in drugs and alcohol and in the more serious bad habits that some people consider are awful or whatever, if you think about it really carefully, so much of the time, that is about escape. Now, if you don't have the management tool to escape any longer, what are you going to do? Well, there's something called in the addictions industry, it's called, or the helping industry, is it's called cross addictions. And that is that we do exactly what this is. We hijack old patterns with new patterns. What we do is we switch them up. So somebody can go from a cocaine addiction to a smoking addiction. And everyone around them goes, oh, well, that's way better because you're smoking instead of using cocaine. And maybe you agree, I don't know. But somebody could maybe switch smoking for drinking, or switch drinking for shopping, or switch shopping for gambling, or gambling for something else. The problem with that is that you're simply switching one thing that's not helping you towards your goals with a new thing that's not helping you towards your goals. So if you simply quit a bad habit, that's not actually helping you. I want to repeat that. If you simply quit cold turkey a bad habit, that's not helping you long term. You feel a little bit better, but it takes a crazy amount of effort, and in long term you're going to find something to replace it with. So what you need to do is understand, what is this giving you? And you want to intentionally replace that bad habit, that pattern that's not getting you what you want, with something that is getting you what you want. I'm going to give you an example. If procrastination or sugar, I'm going to use my examples, okay? These are two things that I've really struggled with in the past. If sugar and procrastination have been a way to avoid stress and frustration, then the cure for that is not to quit eating sugar or to simply quit procrastinating. The cure for that is developing a skill set that gives me the same rewards. It allows me not to escape, but it allows me to deal with the stress. Once I start dealing with the stress, then I get my reward. Once I've got my reward, then I don't need to worry about things anymore. I hope this makes sense to you. Again, if you have any questions, please reach out to me. Now, let's go to the next one here. Okay, then you want to identify the cue. So again, you want to identify the pattern, the thing that you don't want to do. Then you want to experiment with rewards of things that could be helpful for you, give you the same type of reward, but in a way that's leading you towards your goals. And then you identify the cue. So again, I'm just going to jump back to point number two here, experimenting with rewards. So for me, mindfulness is a way to deal with stress. When I practice mindfulness and deep breathing techniques and those kind of things, I get relief from the stress. The cool thing is that when I'm practicing mindfulness, the stress doesn't come back as easily. I'm not simply avoiding it, I'm actually dealing with it. And I've studied mindfulness a ton so that I can understand this. So now I've identified the pattern, procrastination or sugar. I've experimented with the rewards. The rewards are a relief from stress. So I find some other pattern that will help me achieve the same reward, mindfulness, and then I need to identify the cue. Now the cue is the thing that triggers the pattern, okay? So I feel stress, and sometimes feeling stress could be the cue, but sometimes it can be something else. Usually it's something else. Usually I feel stressed and then there is something that happens and then I bump into, or I go into my regular pattern, my regular routine, okay? And typically, here's good news about cue. Rewards, sometimes difficult to identify. Identifying the cue is fairly typically easy. It's typically one of five things, okay? And these are the five things. So number one, location. Where am I? I had a client once that was struggling with smoking. This person didn't smoke all the time. They just smoked every once in a while. And quickly, I discovered that this person smokes typically when they're with a certain people in the evening, and usually out drinking. So the location was out drinking. The time is late in the evening. The emotional state, this is a really, really important thing because this can be a cue. And like I said, for me, stress can be a cue on its own. Other people is the fourth potential or most common cue, and the immediately preceding action. So I'm gonna give you some examples of this, okay? So location. For me, when I'm at home, and it's in the evening, so this is location and time, when I'm at home in the evening, then I am far more tempted to try to find sugar than at other times. If I am in a grocery store and I'm feeling stress, number one and three, if I'm have those two combination of things, then that's a really strong cue for me to buy ice cream. Number four, other people. Are there other people around? I talked about this client that was struggling with smoking every once in a while, and often it was about other people. Like, who was this person around? Because if they're around people that are not smoking, they're not going to smoke on their own. But if they're around people who are smoking, then they are more likely to smoke. And in the same way, think about wasting time or procrastination. If there are certain other people around you, sometimes it's easy. I'll give you an example of procrastination with me. If I am at home around my kids, I am far more likely to procrastinate rather than work on what I need to do. Why? I really like my kids. I really like being around them. I really like spending time with them. I love playing games with them. I love hanging out with them. And so when they're there, it's now a really, really easy pattern to fall into is procrastination, not doing what I need to be doing for my business. And number five, the immediately preceding action. This is an example. An example of this would be when you are, let's say something stressful happens in life. So your boss yells at you, your client yells at you, somebody, you get into some kind of conflict. You have some frustration on the way home from work, on the roads. Somebody cuts you off or whatever. Those can all be preceding actions. It could be that you have a frustrating conversation, an argument with somebody in the evening. This is one for me. If I have a frustrating conversation, if my wife and I have an argument and it's in the evening, I have a really hard time the next morning. It will affect me that evening and the next morning usually. So usually I've got to be very aware of that. So identifying these cues will allow me now to say, okay, this is the time. I need to set things up so that I can have a pattern that's attached at this time in this space. Let me look at the last slide really quick. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go back to these five and give you an example of what you can do here. So let's identify the old pattern. The old pattern is procrastination. The new pattern is that I want to get work done. I want to stay focused. I want to deal with the stress and move on. So I'm starting to, the new pattern is mindfulness. I've identified the reward. It's the stress and the reward is having that escape from the stress or dealing with the stress. And then I go to the cue, and the cue is typically for me, if I'm at home or in a store, if it is later in the evening, if I'm stressed, those are times where I'm going to probably try to escape more. Or even number five, if I've had an argument with somebody close to me, that's another cue for me. So sometimes it can be multiple cues. What I want you to do with cues is I want you to, every time you do the thing you don't want to do for a couple of weeks, every time you do it, I want you to write down what each of these things were. Where were you? What time was it? What was your emotional state? Who was around you? And what happened just before that? And you will quickly discover, after 1 or 2 weeks of doing this on a consistent basis, you'll quickly discover what it is. Once you have this cue, what you want to do is you want you to set yourself up for success. So again, you've got the cue now, you've got the pattern that you want, and you've got the reward. So again, I've got the time, location, emotional state, immediately preceding action. I've got the mindfulness routine that I want to enact, and I have the reward of that mindfulness. I understand it. Now what I need to do is make it easy for myself. If I don't make it easy, I probably will not start the new pattern. I need to make the new pattern easier than the old pattern. So this is what I can do. I can do two different things. One, I'm going to hide sugar. I'm going to, make a rule that there are no phones or computers, or we're not able to procrastinate in any way after dinner time when I'm with my kids or something like that. I can make some family rules. I can make it more difficult to do the things that I typically want to do. If there's no sugar in the house, now it's difficult to escape with sugar. It's difficult to deal with my emotions that way. Now I'm going to have to deal with them in another way if I want some relief. Because to deal with them now, it's going to be harder. I now have to run to the store. And if it's more difficult to do the thing that we're typically doing, we are less likely to do it. I'll give you another example. If your go-to is TV, if maybe that's the way you procrastinate is TV, well, guess what? Every morning what you can do is maybe take the batteries out of the remote control and hide them somewhere, or maybe give them to your kids, give them to somebody else and say, hey, put this somewhere. And every time you are tempted you've got the cue of wasting time on TV rather than engaging with people or doing whatever you want to do. Now what you have to do is it's actually quite difficult. You've got to go and talk to somebody. You've got to go find the batteries for the remote or find the remote and put them in and start it. And then there's this emotional component of connect. You know that the other person understands what's happening. There's accountability. There's all this other stuff that's coming into play now. If you unplug the TV, sometimes that's enough to go, oh, you know what? I'm going to sit down and watch the TV instead. Let me do something else. Sometimes just a break in concentration can help with this. Once I've identified these things, I'm going to make the thing that I typically do more difficult, hide the sugar, get rid of the sugar from the house, hide the remote, whatever it is. And then I'm going to make something else easy. So for example, if I have I don't know, on my watch, I've got an Apple Watch, and the watch has a breathing app where I can just tap a button and immediately do some deep breathing from 1 to 5 minutes. So that's now easy. I can now just tap a button and do it. If I have a place in my house that's a little bit quieter, no matter what time of day it is, in my office, no matter what time of day it is, if I've got a certain setup that I can simply go to, it's already set up for me, and within 5 to 10 seconds, I can be sitting, laying down, doing whatever I need to do, tap my watch, and already be breathing. If that is easy to do, guess what I'm more likely to do now? I don't have the sugar, and I do have the mindfulness in front of me. I'm now more likely to follow the pattern that I want to follow. So you make it as easy, as simple as you can. If you want to start working out in the morning, if that's the first thing you want to do, if you want to start a habit that way, what you want to do is, instead of waking up and going and doing something else, you make it easy for yourself. Put your workout clothes at the base of your bed or on a chair or on the door. In order to get out of the room, you've got to move it. Now it's more difficult to get out of the room and ignore your clothing than putting it on. And once you've got your clothes on, now you've already started the new habit. Now it's easier to take the next step. That's really important for habits as well. Make sure that it's incredibly easy and simple. I'll probably mention this again here. All right, what I think I'm gonna do here is actually cut the video off here. I've got some tips for you. I've got some other things that I wanted to share with you, and then I've got some action steps. For right now, all I want you to do is, this video is getting a little bit longer and I wanna kind of cut it down here. So go over this video again if you need to. I've mentioned a lot of points, a lot of key points that are really important, and I don't want to move on too fast without you thinking through them. So take some time, even right now. Stop the video before you go into the next video. Ask yourself, what is it that really jumps out to me here? What is one action step I can take? What are the cues that I can start identifying? What are the rewards that I can start identifying? What is the pattern that I can start identifying? Start working at this. The more you apply, the more it'll sink in.